is the Great Shalom Broadcast, proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children.
Welcome back, everybody. Today I have with me Tim Lambert from the Texas Homeschool Coalition. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your service. I know you have done a lot for home educators in this state. I understand that the laws relating to how children are educated go state by state.
That is correct.
And we in Texas have quite a lot of freedom.
From the days of the Texas Republic, the state never sought to regulate, restrict, or outlaw the right of a parent to teach their own children until the 1980s. And in the mid-1980s, the Texas Education Agency, which is our statewide Department of Education in Texas, began to get calls from local school districts saying, how do we deal with these people who say they are homeschooling? And the TEA did some research and came to a conclusion that, in fact, what they found is that in Texas in 1915 passed its first compulsory attendance statute. And that legislation said that when a child was 7 years of age or they had to be in a public school or in a private or parochial school that taught a study good citizenship, or they had to have a tutor. And in 1923, the legislature amended that statute by deleting the exemption for tutors. Mm-hmm. So the attorneys doing the legal research made an assumption at that point, which was incorrect. They assumed that in 1923, the legislature had made that change to outlaw home education. And years later, in the Leeper versus Ardenton court case, the state had to acknowledge that in the 1920s, the vast majority of people in Texas homeschooled.
Right.
So obviously the legislature would not make a change to the law that would put, you know, 70 or 80% of the people on the wrong side of the law.
Right.
So the Leeper case clarified that homeschools have historically been private schools. And of course that happened, that decision happened in 1987, and we spent another 7 years in the courts. Finally, in 1994, the Texas Supreme Court upheld that decision, and so Texas went from being one of the worst places in the country to homeschool to being one of the best places in the country. The point we always try to make to people, Sharon, is from a legal standpoint, education, as you mentioned, is directly regulated at the state level. So that means every state can adopt whatever regulation they deem necessary. And in Texas, we just happen to have the blessing from our Lord that the state of Texas does not regulate private schools in general. And when the court said that homeschools were private schools, that put us in that position of having that a great deal of freedom. Now, in 1995, the legislature rewrote the education code. And in that time, right after the Leeper decision, most people don't realize that the Leeper decision, the courts, not only did they say that homeschools are private schools, but they said the state, if they choose to, can regulate private schools. And so in 1995, we dealt with the very real situation of school districts saying, you have to come show us your curriculum if you're homeschooling, and it came devolved into an approval process, and we had at that time a relationship by God's grace with the new commissioner of education, who was previously to that was the superintendent of schools in Lubbock.
Uh-huh.
And so we went to him and explained the problem and asked for a solution, and he, at our request, adopted a policy that is still active today, that if a school district becomes aware of someone who is homeschooling, they can make an inquiry. And if that family responds with a letter, we like to call it a letter of clarification or note, point out that they have a curriculum that covers those basic educational goals and they're pursuing that in a bona fide manner. Once the parent is given that assurance, then the school district, unless they have evidence that the parent is not teaching their children, must leave them alone. So, over the years, Sharon, it's been amazing to see God's hand over and over as we face different situations. You know, in the last 30 years, we've had a lot of battles with school districts and the education agency. About 6 years ago,
Okay, I'm going to jump in here
sure.
and clarify. I do want to hear those stories. So let me just be sure I understand that no one in Texas can just say I'm homeschooling and be fooling around and not educating their children, correct?
That is correct. So to clarify, you don't have to get the school district's permission. You don't have to register with the school district. But if the school district is contacted by someone who says, this family says they're homeschooling, but they're really not, the school district will do an inquiry, and the parents will have to produce some sort of evidence, schoolwork, test scores, something like that. Now, we have worked very hard, Sharon, to minimize that because in the 1980s, the school districts routinely called up a homeschooler and said, you got to come prove to us that you're homeschooling.
Right, really so, harassing.
Yes.
So I think it's helpful for people who are not familiar with homeschool to understand that these families really are educating their children. They may have a variety of philosophies, so forth and so on. And there are certain things that they must cover. Is that correct?
Those are in the Lieber case, the court said they had to have a curriculum that covered the basic educational goals of reading, spelling, grammar, math, and a study of good citizenship.
Okay.
So that's the outline. But what we have been concerned about from a historical standpoint is the state trying to say, you have to convince us that you're homeschooling, we have to approve your curriculum, those sorts of things. So we've worked very hard to push back against those things.
Well, we have controversy even at the public level about what kind of curriculum, exactly what we are teaching in terms of civics or American history. Yes.
Well, that's exactly right, Sharon. And of course, I always tell people I'm pretty politically active. And I tell people that it was the Democrat Attorney General Jim Maddox who got me involved politically because he stated publicly that he did not believe parents were qualified to raise their children, much less teach them at home.
Not qualified to rear their children? Okay, and so who might be?
Exactly.
The shades of
exactly. So,
science fiction.
So that whole argument in the 1980s was that we are concerned about children and parents really should not be trusted. So our point was always, and you brought it up just a few minutes ago, let's look at the public education system where the government is in control and the government writes all their regulations. And there's not a state in this country that doesn't have a dramatic problem with their public education system and children being dropping out or not being able to read and then graduate. And so our premise has been that we believe parents have a God-given, in fact, a constitutional right to direct the care, control, and upbringing of their children.
Right, and minimum standards are not what we're aiming for.
Exactly.
As parents. Exactly.
But we believe the parents should be the ones to set those standards.
Yes.
And, of course, that's really been the debate. The encouraging thing for us over the last 30 years in Texas is we have a lot of friends in the government now, which was not the case in the 1980s. And by and large, a lot of that is because homeschoolers as a group are very politically active. And I think one of the things we try to do, Sharon, is we try to help people understand that our freedom is connected to our participation in the political process. So it is not for the faint of heart, shall we say. But the blessings are manifold, not just for the family, but for the children. And of course, you know, the U.S. Department of Education reported earlier this year in 2016 on their last survey in 2012, and homeschooling has grown in the 10 years between 2002 and 2012, homeschooling in the United States had grown by 62%.
That's significant.
Dramatic.
Dramatic.
And and if you talk to people, Sharon, I'm sure people tell you that most people start homeschooling because they met some homeschoolers and they met those children and they said, wow, that's what I want my children to be like. Mm-hmm. So these homeschool kids, as a rule, are well-spoken, they're mature because they spend a lot of time around older people, their parents. Mm-hmm. And so that has helped us bring the evidence, so to speak, to policymakers and elected officials and those sort of things. So by God's grace, we've been able to see dramatic expansion. Now, I mentioned about 5 or 6 years ago, our board, our organizational board, began to amended our mission statement to include not just support and protection of homeschooling, but parental rights. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because what we have seen in the last 6 or 8 years is the battle for homeschooling in Texas today is no longer with the Department of Education. It's in the family courts. So it is not uncommon now for us to see divorce cases or CPS cases or custody cases, grandparent access cases, where you have a family either in a conflict between parents or in a conflict with Child Protective Services or even with grandparents suing fit parents. And the question then becomes, who gets to choose whether or not this child is homeschooled? And so that is a very different situation because in those cases, you're in a family court where a judge makes a decision on what he considers, quote-unquote, in the best interest of the child. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, we see a lot of situations where judges are negative toward homeschooling or have biases toward homeschooling. So we today, as an organization and as homeschoolers, are trying to educate the public not just about homeschooling, but about the fundamental right of parents to make decisions for their children.
Well, I would have thought that was a fundamental right.
It is a fundamental right under the Constitution, but as you are, I'm sure, are aware, there are a lot of constitutional issues that we think are settled that are not accepted.
Freedom goes to the vigilant.
Exactly.
So who are these judges? Are we talking about high-level jurors who know the law, or can this be just someone who is elected?
You know, these are typically county court at law judges or state district court judges, and Sharon, our organization, has been involved in endorsing candidates for 30 years. Uh-huh. But in the last 5 or 6 years, we have begun, in fact, we're the only state organization that I know of that vet and endorse local judicial candidates. Mm-hmm. And the reason for sharing is because it's those local judicial candidates who hear these cases.
Right. So anyone in the state of Texas can go on your website at election time and find out how the judges have responded, what their positions are.
That is true. Now, let me just say that it is one thing. We endorse statewide candidates. We endorse legislative candidates. But, Sharon, we have 254 counties in Texas. And so one of the things that we are trying to do is we're trying to develop a network of homeschoolers who will develop these committees to help us vet local candidates. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing, and we've done this in, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth and Houston and San Antonio and Austin, is we get a group of really qualified pro-life, conservative, pro-parental rights people to vet these candidates. And then those committees work with us and help us do those endorsements. So we don't have that set up in 254 counties. We would like to, and we're working toward that. But that is but we see the long term is, you know, who would have thought, Sharon, that we would live to see the day when we can't agree on when life begins, we can't agree on what marriage is, and we just live in a day where there is not a consensus in our culture on what it really is true and not, and parental rights is in that mix. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of folks like Jim Maddox years ago who thought the government rather than parents should be making decisions for the children.
Yes, well, that's a little scary.
It is.
So if a couple has decided that their child would be best educated at home and they are about to implement this plan, they're going to consider signing their child out of school. They wouldn't just fail to show. They would. So tell us what the best practice is at that point.
So first, let me just say that I would encourage people to go to our website, thsc.org, because we have videos there. We have lots of information, including that process you should go through to disenroll your child. So the first point we always make is if your child has been in the public school, and that means kindergarten or higher, then you need to formally disenroll that child. We recommend that you do that in writing, either by sending an email to several people in the district or a certified letter, so that you have documentation that someone with the district has received your notice of withdrawal. And once you do that, if the district contacts you, they may do that in person or on the phone. And of course, this never happens when dad is home. It's always during the day. But we recommend that you be prepared to ask that person for that they give you their request in writing. And according to the TEA, the only thing you have to do is respond with what we call a letter of assurance. It just says, I have a curriculum that covers these basic areas. I'm pursuing in a bona fide manner. And that should be the end of it. Now, I'd like to say that we never have any problem, but this is a big state, and it's not uncommon for us to get calls from some of our members who say, you know, a school district is saying, I have to come in, I have to sign forms, I have to show them their curriculum, none of which is true.
Right.
And so at that point, we get involved and intervene with the school district or whoever the authority is, and try to clarify the situation.
Okay. So I would be a member.
Yes, that's
fact,
a good idea.
When I homeschooled, I was a member. Yes. So because a mother finds herself facing an official, you need to know what to do and
sure.
And have a backup plan if things are going wrong. And sometimes things go wrong.
Yes, they do. We had the last couple of weeks, we've been intervening with a homeschool mom, a single mom who has a child who's turned 18, but he's still in school, and she had Social Security benefits for that child, and so she was dealing with the Social Security office, and we wrote a letter, and they refused to comply and continue the child support, the Social Security benefits, and so we wrote a second letter. It was about an 8-page letter, and we quoted the law, and we copied Senator Cruz and Senator Cornyn. And we're fairly aggressive with them, and we're happy to say that mom's child's benefits were reinstated.
That's the law provided.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, and you know, Sharon, I used to think that, you know, if we just got the law changed and the law was clear, that we wouldn't have any problem. But, you know, we live in a fallen world, you know. And so we are advocates. We're unabashed about that, and we believe that parents have a God-given right to direct the education and the bringing of their children, and we're happy to intervene with our members.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wonderful. And I know that having a CPS official at the door can be the most scary thing, and really it can happen very innocently. Somebody in the community sees a mother and a child during school hours and assumes that this child is not being taken care of without knowledge, and they're going to investigate, but then what?
So one of the big things we try to do is educate people on being prepared beforehand. So we've got a whole lot of information on our website about how to deal with CPS, and I have a relationship with the commissioner of DFPS who heads up that agency, and so we try to work with them from a policy standpoint, but we also have we have a CPS attorney who's a homeschool dad in Houston, and he represents our members. So if people are members of our association and they're contacted by CPS, we say you need to call our office, let us put you in touch with our attorney, and he will then interface with CPS. And last year alone, Sharon, we had about 70 contacts that contacted our office that had either been contacted or had some sort of interface with CPS. Mm-hmm. And it's a scary thing, mm-hmm. because this is not just truancy. These people can take your children.
Right.
So we are very aggressive in dealing with CPS. We also do a continuing legal education seminar. So once a year, mm-hmm. we train attorneys to defend families from CPS.
Correct.
So we have several attorneys who help our members.
Right. Right. I understand there was a judge in Tarrant County that just went outside of what I would have imagined. Do you want to tell us?
Sure. In 2011, in fact, this was the case that really got us involved in the parental rights. We had a single dad who was divorced, and his ex-wife passed away, and her parents sued him for access or possession. So under the grandparent access statute, grandparents whose child has been divorced or deceased or incarcerated, so in other words, it's the grandparent whose child is no longer married for
right.
one reason or another,
right.
can sue that single parent for access. That means visitation. Or possession. That means I can take the child. This is a very different definition legally from custody.
Okay.
And so these are situations, and what happened here was these grandparents were vehement in their opposition to this single dad homeschooling this little girl.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to a judge in Tarrant County, and they got him to give them temporary custody, actually possession is the correct legal term, on a temporary order. And 3 years later, they
that
still had this. This
that's
little,
a long time for a little girl.
3 years later, this little 10-year-old girl is now 13, and her. So this dad was bankrupt, and the judge was trying to end his parental rights. We got involved in that case, publicized it, and wound up paying for the legal counsel for this dad, and ultimately in a jury trial, the jury sided with the dad, and he got his daughter back.
Mm.
So that's scary when you
yes.
when you and we're not talking about sharing. A lot of people when you talk about access or possession, they think we're talking about children who are being abused or these grandparents who are rescuing. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about grandparents who disagree with legitimate decisions that a parent is making.
Parents.
Yes.
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 Right.
So that was.
I understood there was a case where children were actually taken out of the home.
Oh, yes.
For no good cause.
And so that's the Tuck case.
Yes.
That's Dallas. This is Dallas County.
Okay.
So almost 3 years ago, a homeschool family had CPS remove 7 children from their home without cause. They had a 12-hour hearing in which the CPS went after the family for their Christian beliefs, for their homeschooling, and for their ministry to the homeless, and justified keeping their children. And the new hearing, a month later, had an 8-hour hearing. The judge acknowledged that the taking was not justified under the law. She let them have 3 of the children back, but she said, you can't homeschool them, because I'm not sure that's in their best interest.
And is that up to the judge?
That's the problem. In these cases, where in a family court, a judge in Texas has broad discretion mm-hmm. where a child is involved to do what he or she believes is in the best interest of the child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we believe that judge was wrong. And so this has been almost 3 years now. It took almost another 4 months after the family got their children back to be able to homeschool those 4. One child was, instead of being returned, was placed with another parent. And one little girl, a sibling of 2 of those who've already been adopted, is still in foster care 3.5 years later.
Mm.
And so we continue to represent that family. And part of those, part of that issue relates to bad judges, but some of it relates to family law that needs to be changed. And we'll be addressing that in the upcoming legislative session in January, trying to change the laws to help some of those things.
Okay. My goodness. Well, lots of issues.
Absolutely.
Right. So people who are on the point of homeschooling can consult your website.
Yes.
Get the procedure, and that's THSC.org,
Texas Homeschool Coalition, thsc.org.
Okay, great. And I will put that on my website for my listeners, so there'll be a link at that point when this airs. And they should be prepared.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then all of us as citizens need to be active for parental rights and for better education and education options in this.
Absolutely.
And again, thank you for your leadership. We will check on your website.
Great.
And find out your recommendations when election time comes. And in the meantime, how would one get involved? If one is a politically active person and is interested in these issues, where can we hook into that network?
So again, I would send you to our website, thsc.org. And Sharon, we have a number of newsletters that people can subscribe to. One of them is a political newsletter. We're speaking here at the end of December. In January, the Texas legislature will go into session. We'll have 9 people on the ground in Austin during the session monitoring legislation. And so people can sign up for legislative updates. So when there's a vote on a bill that we like or we don't like, people can be notified about that. They can call their legislators, their state senator, or their state representative. So highly encourage people to get connected in that network. And I recognize that, you know, homeschoolers are all busy. Mm-hmm. You know, we're focused on raising our kids and doing all that stuff. But what we've seen too often is people not pay attention and not participate until we lose some freedom.
Right.
And then it becomes extremely difficult to turn that situation around. So, Sharon, we have 6 intern who will be in Austin as part of this 9-member team, and they'll be there for 5 months monitoring that legislation and giving testimony. And we'll have Capital Day, so 3 times during the session we invite homeschoolers to come to Austin.
So when is Capital Day? Because this will air more in the spring.
So Capital Days, we have those dates. There's a date in February, one in March, and one in April.
Okay.
And those dates are listed on our website. People can register for that. And so it's a wonderful good citizenship or government field trip. So you can go to Austin, the capital.
Right.
We spend a morning talking about how the process works, and we let the kids lobby. They can dress up in their Sunday go-to-meeting clothes, and they get to lobby for or against legislation. And I tell the kids, Sharon, a lot of these offices they go into, they're going to be the first real-life homeschooler that these legislators have ever met. And I can't tell you how important that is, not just from a standpoint of the legislation that we're looking at, but when a legislator connects with an articulate 10-year-old who can talk and carry on an adult conversation, the next time homeschooling comes up, that's the picture in that legislator's mind.
Right, and that is what homeschool children look like.
Exactly.
And how great for that child. What an education.
Yes. We have some homeschool dads in the Texas legislature, and we have some staffers who are were homeschooled. So we are, as time goes on, we are better and better represented in the Texas legislature.
Wonderful. And you have, quickly tell us about your convention. It comes up in the summer, right?
Yes. So we have 2 homeschool conferences, one in Arlington on Mother's Day weekend. So it's a great opportunity. It's kind of like an in-service for homeschoolers, you know. We have a children's program and a teen program, so it's like a great opportunity for the whole family. They can come there and do workshops, buy curriculum. The kids have a great time doing the children's program or the teen program. That's Mother's Day weekend in Arlington. And then we have one in July, the third weekend, I believe, in July, in the Woodlands in the Houston area. It's great speakers. It's a really great time of encouragement.
Okay, great. And give us your website again.
www.thsc.org.
Okay. Thank you so much. Tim Lambert of the Texas Homeschool Coalition.